Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Eric.
And Jeff.
And we're It's The Real, and we are guest hosting the Juice podcast.
Right. We are here today with G-Unit.
Yeah.
And today it is the Juice podcast.
The Juice podcast. So, shouts to Eric Ramirez, and here's G-Unit. What is your guys' favorite opening line to one of your songs? Because mine is from Poppin' Then Things, when you say, after the VMAs, my baby mama cuts my ass out. Yeah. I kicked her ass, now we're back friends like Puffy and Steve Stout. Did either of those guys ever say anything to you about that?
No. They didn't never mention it, but I mean, it's was a known altercation between.
Of course,
and
but it's one of the greatest like opening lines ever.
Yeah.
Like I feel like whenever you do that song, you get excited to like say that line because it's just
it's
hilarious and it's.
But using a situation that was over the Nas music video,
right?
You Hate Me Now,
Hate Me Now,
right?
That with the champagne bottle,
it was interesting because I saw them places and they were fine with each other. Like I mean, Stout sued Puff.
Right.
So he got a couple dollars, and he was just fine with the results of that. So it was like everybody's just cool, everything after. So when I said just approaching the lines, I'm looking at the VMAs was after I went out with Vivica Fox.
Right.
And it was like public. It was like probably the biggest covered relationship situation for me. You know what I mean? Like with me, with a woman being covered, that was like right at the point where Get Rich or Die Trying was being honored for, you know, being that album at that point. So it was like a lot of energy around it, and it was a line that matched that scenario. You know what I mean? Like,
By the way, she just came out and said like that that you're the love of her life.
Yeah, you know, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I was about to say that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, the timing of it was out of nowhere for me. Like when I heard it. You know what I'm saying? But I'd like to be the love of somebody's life, right?
Even if she may not be yours.
Well, you know, like I got a real complex lifestyle. And it's because maybe things would have been different if we met at a different period. You know, but for me it was like I just said, that was my first award show piece, like. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was so fast. It was like, what? They didn't tell me. Like, if you bring somebody to the award show, you're married to them.
But that was
congratulations,
a good...
yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. You skipped all the preliminary shit. Like, they just said they're going to treat it like you're
like a thing.
Yeah, a couple, regardless to what you say. And when you say, yeah, we're just friends, they go, yeah, that's what you're supposed to say.
But let's just be honest here. That was a good time to be in the Vivica A. Fox business. Celebrity Apprentice Vivica A. Fox isn't as, like, you know.
It's not the same. But you know what? I think there really wasn't a bad time to be a part of, like her, like what she was doing. She built her career long before me. It was already established when I got there. Like, at that point, she was already seasoned and in pocket. Like, she was for me, she was like Independence Day.
Yeah.
In the scene, like, with the red lingerie thing, like that's who she was. She was not none of that other shit that you thinking about. It was just that. You know what I'm saying? Like and man, I mean,
I was living vicariously through him.
She's not a bad person. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At points you'll say things with. I don't have to tell you. You're a man yourself. You know how it feels when it doesn't work. Initially, you get negative energy and then positive energy because the person has moved on or done different things. And then you may experience different things in relationship and then be able to note when you experience more shit, you go, that person wasn't that bad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, as bad as you thought they were. And then, you know, I think if you weighed all your relationships up against each other, it'd be interesting who you would say stands out as sure. the love of your life at the present moment, because if you may not be in a situation that you're going to be in for the rest of your life, so maybe other things that come that top those things.
Sure. Yeah. I do feel like things are a little different because you're on a grand stage, and right. so is she, so like things get magnified.
Well, I was going to say, like, I feel like you could give relationship advice. You just did that GQ cover story. And I actually talked to the girl in that relationship who's credited as What's Her Name in that magazine. Uh-huh. And she said that they still talk about how you told them to do vision boards and how.
Yeah.
And like it really works.
They
for
tell you to do it for your career mm-hmm. in business. Because if you ask a person, I ask everybody the toughest question in here. It's just simplicity. It gets tough because you say, do you know exactly what you want? A person say, yeah, and then go, if you're ambitious at all, you should know that you want this temporarily, and right after you accomplish that, you want something else, and you want something else, and then you want something else. It's because it's just the nature of a person who's going through that tunnel that doesn't end of ambition. And I learned that about myself over time. But each one of my goals, like, I'd set goals and be like, this works out like this, and I'm straight. And by the time I get there, I've already reassessed things, created new goals, and I'm looking forward to something else, you know? So it's just the journey that I've been on and what I've learned about myself over time. So when I suggested that, is because when people are that thing where you actually create that vision board for yourself and you put all of those different photographs that mean something to you, like what you would want, once you start looking at pictures, it gets easier to just put things. Like, you know what? I would want this car. I would want this apartment. You may not be picking a big house. You may be picking I pick the Jetsons joint. I want everything voice command. Toilet flush. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to do nothing. I want the state-of-the-art joint.
Are you there yet?
Real comfortable living. I'm working on it.
All right.
You come and think you're in a Taj Mahal in my small joint. I got different, you know, all these different design inspirations going on through my place. But I just think when you take those pictures and you put them there, that the things that you won't run out of conversation about with people are the things that didn't match. So, like, if she's putting pictures of 6 kids and right. you got 1, you might want to talk to her. Because before you know it, you got 3, and you go, oh, what happened? Wait.
Right.
Yeah, you know, or you may have to be able to be conscious of her wanting more of that in her life. So the one that you had, then you said, wait until we're in a different position, because she may not be conscious of finances at that time and want these things when... Within tradition, the male would be the financial responsible for financial support or to be a protector in some ways. This is just old traditional values, what an old-fashioned person would say. So you should kind of look at that. I mean, nowadays, I think a woman's a reflection of a man. So if she's if she earns more than you or if she's smarter than you, she reflects you being secure in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if she's, like, gorgeous but stupid as a rock... Hey,
also reflects
it also reflects what's necessary. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, you know why I say that they reflect who the guy is, like who the man is. But
so you've got, you know, 4 people in this group.
Yeah.
Does everybody's goals match up with you? I mean, like Bangs, like where your goals is always like, I want to do this and I want to reach a certain level. Like, what would you say your goals are?
You asking him or me?
I'm asking you.
We'll be honest, from the very beginning, like, We were solo artists, me and Tony Ayo, like, mm-hmm. before I even got with 50. But at that point, like, we were doing all our tapes together, even in the neighborhood. So it'd be, like, 4 of us from one side and then a few other people from another projects and then another projects. But I was so used to just doing everything together. Like, they'll tell you, like, back in the day, they would go to parties and he'll have a shirt with Ayo face on and Ayo might have a shirt with 50 face on. And it was always like that. So... I was just happy to just be a part of the group and be able to have a movement from where we come from. Right. And he stopped me right there. Like, listen, he told me, he said, you're going to have 5 albums or more.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You're going to be a solo artist. And it was at that point. And then the next meeting we had, he was introducing me as a solo artist. Because I ain't had no choice.
Right. Yeah.
I had to go from that point and start working on my album immediately.
It was kind of transitioning.
You heard what he just said?
Him, yeah.
Then you leave the room, I'm telling you, you heard what the fuck he just said? He said,
it's for me,
you up
it's
next.
Different because... Like, in my neighborhood, 50 was, like, a legend. Like, at 17, he had a 4Runner, like, with big-ass Mickeys on it. And he'll be outside, stains on his shirt. I don't know, what is he up to, man? You know, he got money in his pocket. And then he'll be, everybody will buy sneakers or clothes. and he pulled up with a 4Runner at 17. And then 18, he had a Mercedes Benz. So, like, when I came from school one day from Jamaica Avenue, like, I'm like, damn, it's 18 in a Mercedes Benz? Like, everybody's looking like, what the fuck is that? And then you see a kid in high school in a Mercedes Benz. Like, you know what I'm saying?
It's different. We had different goals. Like, what happened is they started hustling when the interest in females came. Like, so usually you saw them get involved in the lifestyle as they approach being maybe
16, 17
years old. That was like the regular time period.
That was common around our way. That was like the common thing.
I had been there probably 4 years early. Like, I was there at 12 because I already was looking at things and assessing it. Because only people that I saw that had financial freedom were people from my mom's life, and they hustled. So when my mom passed, everything that was nice went away. I had to go live with my grandparents, and I become the new number 9. I'm my grandmother's first grandchild, and my mother's the only child of my grandmother's 9 children to get killed. So I came in as number 10, but number 9 replacement for my mom. So being younger than the rest of them, I had like a different interest and energy, like, and I just was away from the pack a lot. So I would look, and I kind of got off because of my mother's relationships. They'd look and go, why you, boy, you young? Why your clothes look so old? You know what I mean? Like, and like a guy did something nice for me. He took me and bought me new sneakers and stuff. And then he went out of town and came back. My shoes was messed up again. And he was like, remember the Reebok Classics? They had the real soft leather in the front.
Yeah.
He had bought me a pair of those, the white joints.
Those are the best sneakers in the world, the old white ones or the old black.
Yeah, he had bought me a pair of them, and it was just certain things in my lifestyle that I couldn't get around, like gym. Mm-hmm. So I had to run and stop and dodge ball and all this other stuff. And I used to clean the shoes after I used them, like a warm, we used a toothbrush to clean the shoe off in the actual house, and still couldn't quite keep them clean for the week he was going for a week.
And
so it was like,
finished.
When they got back, you looked and was like, damn, she's tore up again. Like, and he's like, I see I can't give you fish, I got to give you a pole. So what he gave me next was 3.5 grams, and he said, you know what to do with it? And I said, yeah. He said, well, if anybody bothers you, tell them where you got it from. You know, and he had enough pole in the neighborhood for nobody to kind of go after me for having it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how I got started. But when I said I was hustling at 12, it was between 3 and 6 for my grandparents, though I was in an after-school program.
Yeah.
So I had to be my grandmother's baby at home and then be 50 Cent outside.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know what I mean? So it's the separation between Curtis and 50 and
at a young age?
12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So by the time I kind of grew into learn everything I needed to learn and grew into what I was doing. Because at the same time, I was boxing. I was... You know, in the sport of boxing, I was there. So I really didn't have a problem with altercations or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of took the gym across the street with me. So it was something happening all the time. Like, I didn't mind fighting them because they didn't know how to fight, really. Like, they was street fighting. So I was doing, like, 52 blocks, like Rikers Island type shit, after I learned how to fight in the gym. So I was, like, I'm fighting grown men all the time. Like,
but what really made 50 famous in Southside Jamaica was a famous police chase he had. It was crazy. Like, that was stupid. That was crazy. He had his motorbike.
Yeah, a motorcycle.
And 2 girls got killed in Bricktown, like, 2 weeks. It was a week ahead of time? A couple of days ago.
Yeah, like 3 days ago.
And he had the same, I've never forgot, because he had 1100. It was green, white,
GSXR,
and blue.
GSXR, yeah.
Yeah, everybody knew because he just bought this bike. You know, he always buying something. You know, he always had. Like, he always made a way to get attention on the block. He forget the sneakers. He had the motorbike.
Yeah.
So he come through. I come outside. It's like 12 o'clock in the afternoon. I never seen a police helicopter that low in my life. My friend Fat Shy had dogs running through his backyard. Like, I never. Because it was never a chase.
Because I've been
like
in
this.
All of those areas all the time. Like, when you say Fat Shy, we used to be over his crib all the time. So when they get the scent off the bike, for the dogs to go places, they're going everywhere that we would be at all the time. So the dogs were going through his yard and through everywhere else.
So I wake up, I'm like, yo, what's going on? They're like, yeah, Boo Boo killed 2 girls in Bricktown. I'm like, what?
I'm like, nah, they thought I killed the girls because, like, we would usually ride, like, it would literally take us 10 minutes to get from Queens to 125th Street in Harlem because we ride literally 100 miles an hour from, you know what I mean, from where we're at. On the conduit all the way to cross the bridge on my 25th. And it'd be a pack of us just go uptown. And when they went to go riding, I said, nah, chill, I'm going to stay back. Chill, I'll see y'all when y'all get back. And then the girls got killed. So it just happened that the stock colors of the bike
right
made the police flip the lights and come behind me. But
that's why you got to get the custom.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. It's like, it's one of those things, but at that point, we wasn't customizing like that. We it was a big deal enough to have it, you know, like the 7.
Sure.
And I had a 7, just with the 750 at that point. And then they like flipped behind me. I had a guy with me, I never forget it, Ron.
Yeah. My friend Ron.
He was on the back of the bike. Like, and he had fell the night before. Like, he went down on his bike because he had a 600, but he could ride. So I didn't have a problem with him being behind me. When the cops flipped the lights, he tapped me like, go ahead.
Because he know how to lean.
So we took off from the police and run from them. And it was the first time that I had the police, like, coming in the same direction I was coming in, like, fronting. Because they chased hard, like, they were chasing the murder suspect instead of chasing the guys that just took off. Right. On them on the bike. You know what I'm saying? Like, on the bike, we deal with the car that's behind you. They're not radioing in for all backup for everybody to come.
Right. That was crazy. Well, that's my first time literally seeing, like, the dogs running through. We like, yo, what's going on? And the helicopter was, like, low, like, right above the trees. Like,
yeah, because they were chasing. Crazy. It's the difference between a blue and white officer flipping his lights at you and taking off, wheeling, and doing something like that, or a whole homicide, like a double homicide, the intensity of the chase of your double homicide suspect. So they all just came. Like, it was like the entire precinct. And 103rd, 113.
What was the ending of that story?
Oh, I lost him. You know I lost him.
He lost him.
I lost him.
That was the whole thing of the story. The bike was in front of his grandmother's house, and everybody was like, yo, what happened? He did the Houdini. Yo, it made history in Queens, definitely. Man. That made history.
To him is that, because they all talked about it. But yeah. It's one of those things where you don't get that kind of chase, like where they'll chase you for you to get away. You know, and I had to go on the North Conduit, go under the tunnel, and then by the helicopter, by the time they caught, they didn't know where I went, so they had to go look through the back blast, and then I took the conduit the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't that much traffic that day, so I was doing like 120 miles an hour the wrong way up the fucking street. Then that's the way I got back to the block because the helicopter started looking at the other side of the conduit.
Yeah, when you know, when you're in the hood all day, you're waiting for something exciting to happen.
Yeah, but what's...
That was excitement my day.
But this is real life, and it sounds like a crazy
action
movie.
Yeah, it's like a
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, no, you could die. You could die easy.
Yeah.
Where we
one
from?
One little turn, so car like pull that, out at one of those corners on the North Conduit, and you're dead because you're doing 120.
Somebody
miles
died like that on the.
That's how
JaVale
brother
like
died. Yeah. JaVale brother died
on
Kobe.
He died on something like that. Somebody pulled out and he.
Jeez.
Yeah, like,
a lot.
Real,
we lost
like,
a lot of friends
at
on
that
bikes,
kind of bikes. Kev, like died like that. Like a lot of because it you get comfortable with the. With an extreme power. Like, you know, you can go from 0 to 60 so fast. Like, our fastest cars are equivalent to motorcycles. Like, them bikes been doing that take off in 3 seconds and you at 100 and something miles an hour. And, like, it's like, so once you get comfortable riding and you start feeling like you're in full control, hey, you know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't got nothing around you.
Let's just change subjects real quick. Can we talk about Summer Jam last year in terms of everybody sort of expected Banks and Yayo to come out early on Troy Avset. People didn't know that Buck was in the building. Can you guys explain what that feeling was like?
You know what's funny about that? Because I eventually knew I was going to talk to the big homie.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And him and Banks talk. And you know what I mean? I came to apologize to him because you never get emotional social networks, that's for girls. You
right.
know what I'm saying?
I
don't do that. And the big homie, you know, he just said, you want to do the Summer Jam, and that was cool.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because Troy Ave people was calling my phone, but I knew what it was already, like G-Unit or Troy Ave.
Sure.
And Troy Ave, he's a dope artist, and the records we had was dope, but I knew in my mind I couldn't even really pick it up because it was like, I don't want to blow the surprise. Like, this is the biggest thing
It's a Summer Jam
for
moment.
For hip hop, that year for Summer Jam, that was like the biggest thing, G-Unit. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it was an adrenaline rush for me coming out on that stage.
It's people that was there 10 years ago that was back again. Right. You know what I'm saying? The same people in the crowd. And
yeah. Because we hadn't been there for
We was banned since 2004.
Yeah, we was banned for a little chairs while.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys are sitting in the chairs this time.
Yeah. But it was a crazy experience, man. And you would see, like, the change on social media, like Instagram and Twitter. People would start saying, yo, want some real shit? Yo, you my favorite, but if you don't go, you a bitch. So you start realizing, you know, at the end of the day, we owe it to ourselves. Right. You know what I mean? We love the fans, too. We did it for the fans, but...
It was a great moment, I feel like, just getting you two on stage. But it was... And some people sort of expected it. Some people were like... Yeah. They'll fix whatever rift there is.
But
when Buck showed up, the place just shook. Yeah. Can you explain what that was like for you?
I mean, it was just... I had been away from my brothers for so long that, you know, I was still embracing the fact of being around them. So it all kind of happened so fast. But if you rewind any images of me when I walked out on the stage, it kind of took me a minute to actually get to the stage. You know, because I kind of was like, you know, damn, here we go again, you know, and just to see the reaction of the people, you know, it let me know that this is where we need to be.
It was a cool moment. Because you know what happens? You go, like, I have mixed feelings about the timing of things. Not what exactly it is, you know, because I look. Like, Buck had spent more time out of the fold, and it felt like I was already done with the concept. You digest it, look, forget it, people. I'm never going to work with him.
Right,
before.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
So they had more time to think about that, and they didn't see. When you see me and him have issues, and me and Banks haven't been speaking for so long, that they'll go, okay, they might be there, those two, because they're right from that pocket and in the neighborhood. But it was more exciting when they saw Buck come, because they go, I never thought I'd see 50 do that.
I agree.
Yeah, and you know, and it's like they didn't understand, even in the situations where you would feel like I'm angry or mad about it, my tactics are a little more aggressive because I'm not doing what we would do in the neighborhood when you do something.
Right.
Because, like, if in the neighborhood it would turn into violence. It would turn into aggressive energy if you do something that's out of what we feel like is the right way to do things. And then it prevents people from teetering, from moving. You decide whether you're going to deal with this person or not. You know what their temperament is. And you kind of go, nah, I ain't going. Let me move away. I'm just going to do something else. I'm not going to continue to deal with this person. Because if I get to a point that I'm not doing things that the right way, you know that they don't know but one way to deal with it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it goes to those altercations. So people don't generally play that much with those people. And then when you get our relationships developed into a different, because we have, like, brotherly relationships, because we went so many different places together, experienced so many things that when you come back, if you're not around the person, all you spend your time doing is going, yo, man, if I tell you how it was to someone else, because they don't know what you just saw.
Right.
Like, you know, like, what that was. Yeah. So, like, a big portion of the exciting points in this journey, like, of our lives that we experienced as artists and having success was together. So you gotta imagine what it's like to try and talk to someone who has no idea what you're talking about, and you're trying to, it seems like you said, like an action film.
Yeah.
Right. If now you're saying, well, this is, okay, so, I get it, you were Prince once upon a time. You know what I'm saying? I saw this in Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like that energy.
You guys were in the trenches together, yeah.
But for me, I flash back, like I'm still on a high, because I really remember being at grandma's house, like, you know what I'm saying? And his grandfather got the collard greens, grandma got the Sunday cake, you know what I mean? I'm on the run. We don't know if this is going to happen. 50 just got shot 9 times. He's back in the neighborhood, so we taking a risk. Like, yo, y'all better get in this van. Like, he pull up, it's not no more, we slouching. Nah, he just got hit 9 times. So we went
It was a lot more militant. mm-hmm. at that point.
It changed. We in a minivan, no AC, with bulletproof vests on. Like, yo, 90 degrees.
Six of us.
Yo, when I call y'all, y'all better be here right now in this corner. I'm telling y'all, I don't play around. You got to be on point because you talking to two. Knock on wood, I never been shot. Everybody in the group been shot. Except for me. So I feel the most blessed.
That mean he got bullets coming.
Nah. Knock on wood,
oh, you
man.
Oh, you some yo.
But for be from grandma house, to be from grandma house to jail to Eminem,
right?
Come on, bro. It's that like shit whiplash. Was crazy. And Fifth, it was crazy because we was going to deals. Like, we had Def Jam, Universal, all kinds of shit. And I'm hearing $1.3 million. And I'm like, what the fuck? He's like, no. I'm looking at him like, what the fuck? We still on 134, mother. We got the hoopty outside. Take the money. See, it's different. That's why I always said one thing I always would want from him is definitely his business mind. Mm-hmm. Like, if I could have one thing from him, his business mind. Because I'm like, I always knew he was smart from the neighborhood, but damn, this motherfucker was smart. Then a couple of weeks later, he popping Chris style. Eminem's on the phone. I'm like, that shit all happened too fast for me.
I don't think
Fifth don't understand that shit.
Right.
Then we got Eminem on the phone, popping champagne and all that. I'm like, yo, Chris style, yo, the deal signed, millions of dollars. I'm like, oh, shit, it's really on. I'm on a run, mind you. I'm on the run.
Yeah, right. He's supposed to be in jail.
This shit happened too fast for me. Then I'm in jail, Rikers Island. $1.3 million the first week. I hear him on the radio. Yo, I told y'all. I'm like, yo, what the fuck?
Does that just like feel like totally abstract? Like you're behind bars.
Right.
And you're just like, what the fuck is
and
this?
And then you got to remember, I remember Columbia because he was just about to do.
Yeah.
It's crazy for me because like I met Beyonce and him early. Like mm-hmm. Destiny's Child. I remember being in the studio. 80 dudes was in the studio. They said, yo, Fifth, you got it thugged out in here. You got Destiny's Child, you thug it out. So, like, 50 dudes left. Like, and I remember, like, Fifth was supposed to shoot the video for Thug Love, and he got shot. That day.
Single.
That was the next single.
Me and Beyonce.
With Beyonce.
Right. Scheduled for the next single, yeah.
Trackmasters, right?
Yeah.
You ever see those guys anymore?
Yeah, I ran into Tone one time at the. He was with Stout when I caught him at the basketball.
Oh, game. At the basketball game, I didn't know. So I know he was a little scared.
The Free Yayo t-shirts.
Yeah,
I mean,
this all happened so fast.
M wore that Free Yayo shirt on.
Crazy.
Even Banks. Banks came to see me in jail, and this motherfucker's rings was like this big. I'm like, what the fuck? Well, it's different now, man. It's different. I'm like, I got a fire cap on my head because I'm in shock.
He got a big ass sign on his neck.
I'm like, yo, I
don't know when to shut up. a big cardboard sign. You know what was the craziest part though in the beginning for me was seeing like all of the people that was two eras above me, like question me about the move I was making.
Yeah. Just guys because, from your neighborhood.
Yeah, some from his era too.
Yeah,
but just questioning like, do you show you want to take on what he got? And it was at
that
point.
Like, you mean like beefs and all that?
Yeah. Yeah. Because shit was real.
It was real. It wasn't no play beef.
But at that time. But at that time.
You think it was play on the streets?
That me, I knew what my dream was. But to get next to him and then see how, you know, how much insight he had and giving that shit and everything he said, what was going to happen, and just seeing it happen in small steps.
That was crazy.
That shit was crazy. God. And I knew at that point, this is what the fuck I'm supposed to do. Because if you willing to stand in that fire like that every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Really, you know what's even more, what's even crazier that we don't actually talk about a lot is, but when I got back around, like, because everybody got conditioned for my situation. Like he said, being willing to be around whatever,
You got to tell even your family and the friends that ain't willing. Like,
you just got shot nine times. Be careful.
Your mom will tell you. Stop by
and he's like, no.
They know what's going on in the street. They like,
mother,
don't get your shit.
Banks' mother
off,
thought
man.
Immediately
you
when I would come get him that we were selling drugs. Because she know me, like, I hustled, like, his father, goddamn. So I was out. I knew Banks' daddy before I knew who he was. You see what I'm saying? Because he was older
and
out there.
My aunt was dealing with True.
Yeah, so it's like they was
which was an old
no
was,
no
True. His gen, you know.
Yeah, like they've been like his auntie used to be around the biggest guy in our hood at one point. You know what I'm saying? And Chris was like in the mix with that. Mm-hmm. So I would see him all the time because I'm like I was around things at such an early age because they look at me like they go little Sabrina. They look at me like my mother, right. And because she was already down and involved in that lifestyle, it wasn't wrong to do it in front of me. It's not like I wasn't a regular kid to them.
Right.
They're like, he know that. He was born in that. Like, that was at the table when they brought him. They had to move the cocaine over so they could change his diaper. Mm. You see what I'm saying? So it's not okay for like, when you're around the vicinity of drugs or things going on, they would have things around me that it didn't dawn on them that it's a kid.
Right. It wasn't like a Dr. Spock friendly home.
Right. Like, so it's like you're there and you're going, they go, okay, whenever he'd have a moment that made him feel like maybe they shouldn't be doing that, they would go, he'd go, come here, boo-boo, come. Take this, go, I want you to go to the store for me. That means he gonna give me $20. He's saying, you know what I want, right? That just means he want me out the room. But he's saying he want a Welch's grape drink and onion vinegar potato chips. Mm-hmm. So I go get the Welch's drink, gin, onion vinegar potato chips. I made $18, man. You see what I'm saying? Like, right quick, it's one trip to the store, I get $18. Yeah, you cool like, it's already, we already had a program. Like, whenever he want me out the room, he said, boo-boo, I want you to go, you know what I want. I want you to go get that thing for me. And that's his way of sending me out of the spot. You know what I'm saying? But other than that, he had it, and that was keeping the hustle in me. Like, you know, if you go do this, you get paid for it. So right. That's your hustle now. You wait, and then I'll give you this, and you go get that. And it's never something for nothing, because he could have gave me $20 and said, just step, go out the room for a little while. You know, and instead, let it be an exchange of you going to get a juice and a bag of chips that he don't really need. He don't really want this juice or bag of chips. But he's giving you something to do in exchange for it, so it's not you feeling like you getting free handouts or nothing.
Right. So
then I got shot, and I seen what it really felt. Because you got niggas you went to public school with. Like, yo, I'm just saying, you know, it's hot right here. Like, in this spot right here in particular.
Don't stand next to me,
basically.
I don't want to get shot.
You know, so I seen what it was like. And he called me in the hospital, like, oh, you a big boy now. Get the fuck up out of there.
Man, yeah. 50.
I was out the hospital in 3 days.
Ways in, you know, coming up for us, age difference, 50's older, but, you know, as me in the streets, man, I've been in the streets at a young age like that, man. 13 years old, I was out there doing my thing, and you know, I never once had that guidance, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of got mine strictly from the streets, you know what I'm saying? Right. I was one of the ones that was out there at a very young age. The atmosphere is a little bit different being brought up in the South. Mm-hmm. You know, then up here, so I experienced, you know, some real different but similar experiences. But, you know, the basics of our lives is that we all come from nothing, man. We all come from, you know, the gutter. Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of hip-hop culture. When you can come from, it makes the most millionaires out of minorities. And under tough situations, if you look at artists that have had success to the point that they've accumulated that kind of financial situation, our culture allow you to do it by rapping about the harder portions of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And people hear it, identify with it, and it allow a lot of people in suburbs or different areas to be hip to what that journey is like through the music and the things that people said. So it's a bridge.
Yeah.
Right. So when, you know, you make like $100 million off Vitamin Water, now you're just like ultra rich, you know, you're ultra successful.
Ultra. I like that. Ultra.
But like, ultra. So does that make it harder? Like, is it a burden to rap about the same things?
Nah. You know what's interesting? Even if you didn't sell Vitamin Water, right?
I didn't.
Look, this is what I'm saying. I'm saying for a person that on their journey that made music, the first record, you would have said that was too much money. My first album, I did LL Cool J's career. He had 13 individual albums go.
Did you tell him that when you guys worked platinum together?
You know what I'm saying? I did 13 million the first album with Diamond. The second album with Diamond again.
Right.
You can't even find another artist to match up against me. Outside, Eminem's career is unmatchable.
But was it harder the second album than the first album?
No. The second album came out so fast that I ended up. Look, the first 3 days that I was recording for The Massacre, I created the template for my album with 12 songs.
And you gave him to Game.
Gave him to Game.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sold 5 million records.
Right.
Then went back and created another batch of material that there was, to me, there was stronger things. There was options. Like, I decided, because I intentionally walked into the second album saying I didn't want to make, I wasn't going to make sexual content. I was making the album without putting anything sexual in it. That was why Hey There, Love It, Special, mm-hmm. Higher, different things were on the Game project. And then I went to approaching it the second time, because, and I questioned myself because I did it so fast. It came out so easy that it just was like, should I do this? What you're not thinking about is, writing music is like fitness.
Right.
No matter how much you've worked out in the past, when you haven't worked out, you come in like you're out of shape. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's the process that you got to stay in and stay at it until you get back in shape again. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what the experience was like. And because I had stayed active, because not how much records, how many albums did we put out, but how many records or mixtapes or studio efforts did we create in that process? Like, we would be releasing 3 mixtapes in between the album. You know what I mean? So it's like a constant.
And you were spearheading all of the damn choruses.
Yeah. So it's all of the writing.
All of the classes we had from the mixtapes.
You know what's crazy? He was just talking about
Energy Unit album.
He was talking about 50 Balls of Pleasure.
Man, this nigga balls of playing. First of all, I never had, this is crazy though, because a lot of people want to know like how I started.
Fifth, man.
I never heard no shit that made me go home and write a story. Like, I came up on Slick Rick and stuff like that too.
That was probably,
but it was more like a chant.
Yeah.
We was up top. We was in a Pocono. This nigga said 50 bars of pleasure to me without one fumble. Acapella though. Acapella. So you know what that shit sound like? You putting your own shit to it. It's a movie at that point, not a record.
I just feel like he was in so much of a writing zone at that time. Man. It was just like a zone. Like, everything you just say is just
yeah.
Like,
it's
that's
like, but this is after you've worked yourself into that regimen of it. Like, if you can't do that with a break and then you get back, a break and then you get back. You got to stay writing, and it'll just get easier and easier and easier. It becomes fluent. And then
this guy didn't even like Mini Men. We in the Poconos.
I hope you like it now.
No, look. I love the record.
I'm on the couch because I'm on a run. Yeah. My man's taking care of me again. So I'm on the couch. And he's playing Mini Men.
I love
you,
bro.
And I'm like, yo.
Fucking love you,
dog. Because he didn't like it was a slow tempo song.
Right.
And he was like, and I'm like, yo, you don't like Mini Men? He was like, oh, that's all right. So I said, sometimes these guys make records and they listen to them so many times.
Right, that they start to.
Like, crazy. Because of my, like, you know, how writers have habits also, right? So I look to square up in the 98 RPMs, like in that up tempo, like where it hits. And the Mini Men joint was slower. It was slower than that. And there was a few joints that I was like, do I really want to slow down?
Not to cut you off, just to go back to junior high school, right? 72, my first talent show I did. He performed, like, he was like the, you know, the big shit. So he came on after, mind you, I didn't say shit to the crowd. We just did our thing, right? He come out, first thing he go, yo, if you got love for hip hop, put your hands up. Everybody put their hands up. So I'm like, shit. And these are my classmates.
We have about like 10, 12 minutes, so if we could just go through a bunch of things real quick. Yeah. Not getting my hat back. All right. All right, first of all, Yayo, why in the world did you not get on Snooty Wild's song Yayo? Why did you not do your own remix?
You know what? I loved the record. I just got on it late. Like, it was out there already.
Yeah.
And everybody was telling me to freestyle.
Yeah. I feel like it
wasn't. And at that time, I think we was in the zone working anyway, because we got like about 40 records done.
He was supposed to be on that one.
Yeah, I was. You're right.
Hey,
you're
but we got a new one we about to do.
All right. What's
that? What's that one we took from your man record? We took it yesterday. Chris Brown record.
Shout out to Chris Brown. Yeah, that's right. We was talking about freestyling over that one.
Fifth, you have a new vodka.
Yeah.
Have you drank it?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, when I say I don't drink, I've been doing that because... very beginning,
I had really, nothing was good, the things I was saying on Action Music. So I was trying to constantly promote a clean lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I don't play around a lot. Like, periodically, like, there was points that you may see me, like, a little champagne here and there. Occasionally, but as far as alcohol is concerned, everything's good in moderation anyway. You don't have to necessarily be the wine or drunk or be in competition about how much liquor you can hold. Right. See, cause right. I'm not going to win those type of competitions.
Right.
Like, you know, I'll take a drink and really feel the action. One little drink, like, ooh, hey. And y'all be sitting there talking about, you want some more? You know what I mean? Like, it's a different thing, but it's a choice that I made early on. Mm-hmm. Like, in my neighborhood, I watched a lot of people play with things and then play with them until they didn't have control of them no more. You know what I mean? And even in my household growing up, there's a lot of alcoholism. Like, you know, so you get a chance to see how the adjustments. Like, I have friends that have different people inside them that come out like the genie in the bottle.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They have a drink, and then the genie lets the other person out. Like they cool until they have a drink, and then the tough guy comes out. What you looking at? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, they get ready to fight, and everything
that's
else happens.
Saturday, Friday in the hood.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
Much like Aziz Ansari or Louis C.K., where they put out their stuff direct, right?
Uh-huh.
And their fan base is on their website, and they can pay direct. Have you ever thought – you have a huge, I feel like, opportunity, especially with This Is 50 and the amount of people and traffic that you get through that.
Right.
Have you ever thought about doing a concert and just selling that, like the live streaming or like the tape version through that? And furthermore, have you thought of doing something like Drake, where he – like everyone goes to Toronto now, and it's like – an event. It's the event, right? And I feel like you're in such a power position right now. You could promote your own concert. You could get, you know, yourself, and everyone wants Dipset with you guys, and everyone wants
right, like D-Block and you know, to a lesser extent, Ja Rule or somebody like that.
Everybody wants, you know, that era to all come together. Everyone wants New York to come together. Is it possible for you, you know, you promote boxing, you have all this
To do your
own thing.
I've done one in the past. Well, two.
On Governor's Island.
Right, on Governor's Island.
50 Fest.
Yeah.
I'd like to do something with a lot of the new artists, because it's a lot of young artists that come out that are interesting. I'm not sure if they have the same, if they've been bumped around enough. Because in process, it took a long time for me to get to be seasoned and be the kind of artist that can create a full body of work that people would be interested in versus just one song at a time. If you can keep that up, I'm impressed. Yeah. One song at a time, because a lot of times our culture is out with the old, in with the new.
Mm-hmm.
And you can come with that one song and then they say they don't want to see you no more. Like Trinidad James, I haven't seen him. That's gone.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and then you look, you say, I'd like to have those guys while they're current. Like everyone, all of the guys, that one song guy, that all be on the show. And they may not necessarily only perform one song, but keep it down to the interest of the audience.
We had Fabolous in here probably a month ago, like maybe less. And we were talking about how I was amazed that he was probably the one New York artist that made it through that time without having problems with G-Unit that I know of. How did that happen?
Well, he was on the tours. Fabolous was opening.
Yeah, but that didn't stop you from, going at different people.
I didn't go at people until they said things or expressed any differences with the success that they were watching me have. Don't look at hip-hop culture and forget that it's competitive to the point that it's forced all kind of MCs to battle. What exact reason would KRS-One be arguing with MC Shan when there's no don't know each other? It's from the origin of the music itself. It comes from that. It's MCing is to be microphone controller for you to be able to come up with something or to do something that makes the audience respond to you immediately. So in all those cases and situations that something came up, I can pinpoint to you where I got a chance to see them doing things that would indicate to me that they were uncomfortable with the success I was having. Mm-hmm. And they... I mean, when the altercation takes place, it's their choice every time. Like, it's not me necessarily. I don't go find people to have altercation with. Like, Fabulous never presented himself that way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he never had an issue at all. Like, he was always someone that was independently working on his own, and because of that, he kept his own personal interests at heart.
Right.
I have a couple questions on sort of rap rumors. Was it true that when you had MOP signed to G-Unit, did you bring them up to your Connecticut house and sort of, like, keep them there to sort of get them in a and whatever came of that material?
Well, I still have those records. I still have everything that they recorded at that time period. And it's tough. Like when we talk about like FM Vodka and stuff like that, when you have habits that take the work that you just did in the gym and get rid of it, it's tough for you to make the transition back to your original state that people were comfortable with. And I've seen them do it since. They've chilled on that and got everything together. When I see Fame, I couldn't believe he looked it like that. He was all in shape. When we did the summer jam, I ran into him. You know, he's able to discipline himself. But it takes, people have to be able to lock down his timing. You're not going to be able to just do it because they signed the deal. And they're not as, like, these guys are pointing me out and go, yo, you militant. I think it's even cooler to merge different things.
At the height of your back and forth with Cam, is it true that you sent black flowers, black roses to the asylum offices?
Yeah. all of the Def Jam with was the obituary.
Hell yeah.
Oh, he sent that to them. Because it was, and then the song was funeral music. You know?
Themed.
Yeah, it's themed. But they would look, at good tactics and things I would do. They'd be like, yo, he's crazy. Did you get your dead flowers this morning? He said, Cam is finished. You're going to kill him. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of fun, man. We had a lot of fun competing in that. That was one of those things, like, since then, I'd like to see what happens when they're all back, if they'll go through the same process. Because we don't know where it'll come from. It probably, you know, some positive stuff.
Yeah. I got two more. Do you have?
Yeah, I got a couple.
Buck, there was a picture of you with Styles and Jada from last night. Is that right?
Sheik and Jada.
Sheik, okay.
Yeah, last night. Yeah.
What's that all about?
You the police?
Nah. I just want to know if there's any material you're recording.
No, I'm just joking. It was, we recorded a record for Jada's project. Yeah, it's a record featuring me and Yo Gotti and Jada. It was dope. So, yeah, man, shout out to them, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
We had heard his project was going to come out around All-Star, but it never came out. But good that he's still recording now.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the process is not going to stop. You're going to always see new music out of, you know, artists. I think a lot of guys are not reaching out to the right people because they don't know what the channels are. You know what I mean? Because it's not that serious. I think, like, if they sent me the song and I liked the song, the artist that sent it to me would probably get features that they didn't intend to get. Because a lot of times with Def, like, I did three songs one night just because. I flew to L.A., got there, I said, okay, I'm going to do, like, let me see what's new. I did YG's first song.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Toot It.
Toot It, yeah.
I did Jeremiah's second hit record, Down On Me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I did Man's Buzzin'.
Right.
The same night. Did them in that was Man's biggest record. Like,
yeah.
All his
yeah.
artists.
Yeah.
All
three his of them only record. Like.
Too. Yeah.
It's in the first paragraph of his wiki page. I looked this morning.
Yeah.
So, Banks, you have a new mixtape on the way?
Yeah. I've been working on the Cold Corner 3. Before my last mixtape was AON. With Drama.
Mm-hmm.
That tape was actually sound like, did you hear the Before the Beast mixtape that
yes.
Buck put out?
Yeah.
The record exclusive we had on there was one of the records from that batch.
Hmm.
So I had about 13 records that sound like that, and then Trinidad James came to New York and started saying all the shit he was saying.
Yeah.
So I felt like I had to give him substance at that point.
Right.
You know, but this is, Dope Into My Last is kind of like a segue. It's like, down that same
thing. Trinidad James made you do something?
Nah, Trinidad James, when he came to New York, when he said all that stuff on the stage, I knew New York wasn't gonna embrace records like that at that time.
Right.
They was looking for, you know, traditional.
Which is crazy, by the way.
Yeah.
What?
That
like,
Trinidad James
that,
would.
Like, a lot of stuff shifted, like, at radio.
It did,
and stuff
because
like
the DJ
that, like,
started showing resistance because they felt like, He can't come here and say that.
Right.
So for artists from New York, if I would have came with a record that sounded like I was from Atlanta.
New York rappers, yeah. I don't care about New York. Or
right,
New
he
York
was saying
rappers,
that Atlanta
South
runs
South
hip-hop.
Like,
and
we didn't have our own identity.
Right, and that he said it in New York, in Brooklyn.
No, but he said it in, like, it was like a, it wasn't a thugged out crowd.
No,
bro.
No, I mean, like, it was like a Converse crowd.
It was a thugged out crowd, right. Believe
even
you
in
me.
That, that's what I'm saying, like, that's what I'm, that's why I'm surprised that that's what set everything off.
Yeah, he got away
know,
with that.
I don't even know that it set anything off. I just know that I didn't hear anything else from him.
Right.
That would make, you know, because I think, I've seen artists make very big mistakes with things that they say. Some of us shouldn't even have telephones because the Instagram is on it. Or, you know what I mean? The things that they say directly to the audience that you can't take back.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you could think that. That's okay for you to say that in the privacy of, you know, of your circle of people, too, if that's the way you feel at the current moment. And then if you say, like, I made mistakes myself. I said with D4L that you never see anything from that again. And I didn't see anything from D4L, but Shorty Low showed up.
Sure.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, a lot of times, you know, you just got to look closer at what you're talking about. Like, that combination of people at that point, like a group versus a solo artist, two different worlds apart. When people show interest in the artist in the group, then you know you got talent, yeah, as individuals. Because there's still people who can't tell you every member of the St. Lunatics. Still people who can't tell you every member of D12. And D12 sold more records than shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, they did extremely well, and it's not, but they, it's the interest of him sells so much. He shines so bright that sometimes they didn't pay attention to everything else. And would they buy records from the individuals?
Right, right.
That are there. So, you know, when you do see a group where everyone there sold over a million records as a solo project, it's a significance in G-Unit.
Does Slow Down count as one of the members of the St. Lunatics, the guy with the mask?
Yeah, absolutely. You said the guy with the mask. I know him more than you know some of the other people.
Yeah, yeah. You know, City and, yeah. Yeah, Spud or whatever.
He definitely would.
Do you want to ask your last question?
Yeah, I remember absolutely where I was when I heard In the Club and Funkmaster Flex played it about
15 times.
Yeah, an hour's worth. I know whose driveway I was sitting in, and I wouldn't turn off the radio. I'm sure you know where you were.
I was in our driveway.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was in a different driveway.
Yeah.
Where were you guys when you heard that? And did you know that, like, you guys would have a dozen plus years?
I was trapping in the bando.
When the song came on, like we was just riding. We was in a 93 Dodge Caravan. Never forget, it was like prune burgundy.
No AC.
Ride like this. Strapped hard as a motherfucker.
You should have kept that van, man. You should have kept that van.
No, I shouldn't have. I got rid of that. But I got like,
burn it.
We ride and the joint come on, and you listen and you go, ooh. See, everything at that point was still, it was all recreational. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything that you that was doing musically was because, what else am I do? Like, I'm writing and doing that because I had conditioned myself for that so often. I was doing it every day, all day. So it's like, still doing that in between time, but you know, like, I had to run into parties involved and do some things. I was looking to do that. So when the record started working without us, like going on the radio and then they started playing, because what happened is it started being something that was happening because Stretch and them was listening to the tapes. They was hearing the mixtapes and stuff like that, and they was really into it because a lot of times people say things and then their actions of who they are make you go, that's not who you are. You finally figure out that the artist is what they're selling you. And me, in my case.
It was so crazy on the street. 50 had to tell dudes, like, yo, don't beat up the bootleggers. They're our friends, man. Because every bootlegger from the city, Queens, Jamaica Avenue, we was there. G on the mixtapes was laid out there.
No, don't beat the bootleggers.
Don't beat the bootleggers.
They're marketing for us. They didn't understand it because they're looking like, yo, every bootlegger got your.
They got your CD out there. Yo, don't worry.
One of the homies caught the guy by the train station, knocked his teeth out his mouth.
Yeah.
I said, boy, I need him to sell shit.
Yeah.
What you do that for? He said, "Oh, my bad, homie. I thought he was trying to sell some money out of it."
Driving here past 25th, I'm like, yo, I remember all the bootleggers used to be out here. Yeah. Like, you would catch a G-Unit CD at from here.
They didn't realize that they had became my personal distribution and marketing team.
Shout to them.
You know who sold me a G-Unit tape? Uncasa.
Really?
From Dipset.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me tell you, see, this crazy is this.
No. Shit.
When the first 50 Cent of the Future came out, I swear to God, he came like he had an album release.
It was. I got shot. Yo, I got shot off the energy of that tape. Now I was we was carrying the hard copy. That's when it was a real time like that. My first experience was Bad News. That was my moment. Bad News. That and Bank told me switch your style up. Bitches still asking about that shit everywhere I go.
Yep.
Amazing. Thank you. The Beast is available now.
Right now,
Tony Yayo, Young Buck, 50 Cent, Lloyd Banks, guys, we really appreciate
it. Yes.